Yeah, baby.
Here we go. We're going live right now.
The Killer Bees are counting down to Texans training camp.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
With the top 10 storylines of the Houston Texans season.
Look around. Let's go.
Training camp right around the corner. It opens a week from today, the first Houston Texans training camp practice on July 29th. Rookies, by the way, reporting on Sunday. It's cruel of them to make them report on a Sunday. Veterans report on that Tuesday, the 26th. But we're counting down the top 10 Houston Texans storylines entering the 2022 season. And today, with number 6, top storyline is going to be, how is the rookie class, also with the idea, the top dog of that rookie class, was Derek Stingley Jr. the right pick? And when we get to the end of the year, when the Texans are 4-13, or whatever they are, after the 17 games of the 2022 season, how do you think we're going to be viewing the rookie class and Derek Stingley Jr.?
I think we're going to be praising Nick Caserio more. I think that he's going to hit more than he's going to miss. You're going to find out just how good this draft class not only is, but can continually be as part of a big rebuild, and how long that they can be foundational pieces. I think that getting guys where you got them, maybe extending yourself a little bit in how you got Mechie, but knowing that you got the guys making the smarter decision, the only one that's really going to be hyper-scrutinized is going to be, because there was a guy that was close to the same ability level, is going to be Stingley versus Sauce. And I think that his health is going to be the first and most important thing, because I believe that if Stingley's healthy, you're going to find out that athletically, I believe that he is the perfect guy for the Houston Texans. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Sauce Gardner, because I loved him coming out of college, and I know you did too. I just think that that's the one thing that could be over-scrutinized. But I think overall, when you just see, as long as these young players stay healthy and they're given the opportunity to play, you're going to see a bunch of foundational pieces for this rebuild that are going to make you happy.
I feel really good about this rookie class. I also think that Nick Caserio, like, deserves a bit of the benefit of the doubt whenever it comes to evaluating and drafting rookies. Now, it hasn't been the big swing and miss, right? It hasn't been the huge splash. But if you just look at his first draft class, 2021, the rookie class of 2021, Davis Mills, the third-round quarterback, better. We perceive Davis Mills way better now. I don't care if you're part of the Mills Mafia. I don't care if you don't think Davis Mills is an NFL starter. Everybody universally thinks higher of Davis Mills right now than they did the day that he was drafted.
Yep.
Nico Collins, and maybe the Texans have, like, they're putting a lot on Nico Collins' plate, but they're going to camp with Nico Collins as their number two receiver, somebody who was drafted outside of the top three rounds. Brevin Jordan's going to see a lot of snaps on this team. Roy Lopez is an NFL starter who you got in the sixth round. They'll rave about Wallow, who they seem to love as well. So I think Caserio's first class, not a huge splash there, but he's given us some benefit of the doubt, at least in terms of the way that he can draft. So this year, you look at Stingley, obviously the big one. You look at Kenyon Green, who the Texans traded down to acquire another pick to get Kenyon Green. Jalen Petrie's an exciting piece. John Mechie's an exciting piece. Christian Harris is an exciting piece. Those are the guys I'm looking at, obviously, the most, more than anybody else. And all of those guys were drafted higher than what the Houston Texans drafted to Davis Mills. We even mentioned Damian Pierce, a fourth rounder.
Pierce is a guy I'm very, very interested in.
Who could be the lead back on this team by the end of the year, right? Like, that was our first storyline. Who's the lead back for the Texans? Damian Pierce has a coin flip chance to lead this Texans team in touches out of the backfield. And I would say in the second half of the season, he's going to be that guy for the Houston Texans. So I think we're going to look back at this rookie class, and it's going to be the foundation of what is Texans' hope. It's like, okay, Derek Stingley Jr., Jalen Petrie, Christian Harris, they got this defense looking pretty good.
They do.
If we go defensive end instead of quarterback with a Willie Anderson, now we're talking about a top 15 defense, and that's the foundation of the rebuild.
And I think what people lose sight of, because we're always so hyper-focused on what not even arguable, it's the most important position in football is quarterback,
sure.
Right? But we also need to remember how many teams find a way to win and win consistently by winning on the defensive side of the football, by winning that half of the war, by being able to dominate on defense. And if you can build a young, athletic, dominant defensive group that it looks like they have the makings of, you can stay in football games when sometimes your offense isn't clicking on all cylinders. This is what the Chiefs struggled with for the last couple of years. When Mahomes wasn't at his best, when he wasn't able to just put point after point on the board, their defense was Swiss cheese. There was holes all over the place. And so, therefore, they had a hard time kind of just basically trying to stay above water level and tread water enough to keep them in games. If you've got a good defense, no matter what your offense does, a lot of times can just be icing on the cake, or you just need a couple plays if the defense plays the way they're capable of. I love the fact that just all the players that we've talked about, and you know I'm a big fan of Harris. I think the way this team is constructed now and the fact that you really have people across the board, secondary and front seven, that offensive coordinators have to be aware of, that's a huge first step for a rebuild.
I'm more bullish on the defense, and maybe it's because Lovie Smith is the head coach.
Sure.
And Lovie Smith, as the head coach, is, I think he'll prioritize defense. I know he's not calling the plays, but he's in charge of the overall scheme of this organization. I think we're going to look at this defense by the end of the year. I don't think they're going to be in the top 20 defensively, but I think at the end of the year we look at it and be like, man, the Texans could hang their hat on defense in the next few years. They have a chance with the pieces that they have, with the guys we mentioned, Stingley, Petrie, Harris, to throw in with the other young players too. Like, we love John Grenard, the Roy Lopez NFL starter, that this defense could start to show the signs of being one side of the football that can be top half of the league in 2023. They're going to have games where I think they look really good defensively. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, I don't know why I'm not as bullish on the offensive side as versus the defensive side. Maybe it's because Kenyon Green's a guard, and if we're being honest, a guard position's pretty boring in the NFL. He's not a skill position guy. He's not a left tackle or a right tackle. He's not a quarterback. But John Metchie, I'm really excited about as well. We don't know where we're going to see him, though. So I think that's why the tempered expectations of this rookie class, you had that with Metchie, because if the Killer Bees are deciding, make sure that Metchie's 100% back,
say,
or 100%, and then give him 4 more weeks.
I think I heard the Wheelhouse talking about this, where he's got to be out there. No, he doesn't. I don't see any reason why he's got to be out there until he's 100% healthy. You're not trying to win or make the playoffs season.
They are. They think 7 or 8 wins.
Okay. The Wheelhouse? Okay, yeah, I was going to say, because realistic fan bases the fan base that looks at this team says, look, whether you want to embrace the suck or not, the best course of action for this team is to make sure that you don't do anything to screw up the future. Obviously, I personally think that you should get the highest picks possible, embrace the suck for 1 more year, and you can speed up your rebuild. But the other way you can make sure you don't screw up your rebuild is take those young players, put them in compromising positions, and then realize that you've not only hurt them for this season, you've stunted their growth, or maybe even thwarted the ability for them to be someone that you can be counting on for the next 3 to 5 years. That's why I don't rush Metchie back. You used draft capital to get him. You know that if he's right, he could be a big part of what you're trying to do on offense.
Yep.
Don't screw that up by trying to put him out there at 75% if he's still hobbling around.
Just his development, though. Like, the fact of, like, the NFL is a big leap. Like, he went to Alabama, I get it. Like, Alabama's a great pipeline for the NFL. The SEC is a great pipeline for the NFL. It's as good as you can find that is out there. So I understand that. But even though that it's the best pipeline to the NFL, it is a massive leap from the college game to the NFL game. And if you put out a rookie less than 100%, like, even the most healthy rookies are already going to have a learning curve. They're already going to have difficulties adjusting to the speed of the game, adjusting to the NFL. And look, even whenever he says he's 100%, like, you got to make sure. You got to give him 2, 3, 4 weeks after he's 100%.
Your doctors are the ones that have to make that ruling, because you know he wants to be out there.
But on top of that, like, if he goes out there 99%, like, you don't want him to be facing those challenges, because now it's a stacked deck against him, and it's already stacked against all the rookies in the NFL anyway.
You talk about the speed, I'll talk about the physicality.
Oh, boy.
Because you know, you're as good as Alabama was and how everybody talks about the NFL talent on Alabama, you're not playing against the same type of talent that Alabama brings to the table in college. Every single time he lines up, someone's going to be making a statement, sending a message, showing them that this is where real men play the game of football. Knowing that if you got an injury, they're going to pick on it. They're going to look at you. They're going to test you mentally and physically, and they're going to put it to you. And if you're not 100%, you're not ready for that. And all that smoke could be a huge negative if you're doing it at 75, 80%.
And I like the upside of Metchie, to where if it cost me 4 games on the front end because I think he'd be a better player for it long term, do it. Like, that has to be the focal point. That has to be the priority. 713-780-ESPN. At the end of the 2022 season, how are we going to view the Houston Texans rookie class? And when we look back at Derek Stingley Jr. as the right pick at number 3. 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, a sign that the Browns perhaps don't think they're as strong as Super Bowl contenders as a lot of others think. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Houston Texans, top storylines, entering training camp next week. 713-780-ESPN. First practice 29th, rookie camp 20, rookies report 24th. The vets report on the 26th. Keith from L.A., our guy, Keyshawn Johnson. I don't know about y'all rookie class. They got a lot on their hands playing for y'all. Go Rams. So he and Stafford. Keyshawn Johnson
feel?
In L.A.
Key, you feel better now? I mean, you're going to set yourself up for an awesome weekend because you got that in?
I appreciate him listening. I like the back and forth.
He loves his L.A.
Well, I can tell you something about the Rams rookie class.
They didn't have one.
What does Les Snead say?
Less is more.
No, he's just at them picks. but they won a Super Bowl, so they have scoreboard, and there's no doubt about that. A sign that the Browns don't think they're contenders this year. Look, they went out, they traded for Deshaun Watson. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of a suspension. If a suspension came down today, by the way, I would not be shocked.
You said that.
All these teams are entering training camp. They'll all be started by next week across the NFL. They have to decide at some point. The judge, Sue Robinson, she wanted all of the final testimony, I guess, or the final written report from each side by, I think it was the 25th, which probably going to get it done before. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, the Browns signed Josh Rosen yesterday, which is kind of an interesting move, even though our guy, Randy Mueller, told us that don't be surprised if the Cleveland Browns bring in Josh Rosen. Randy Mueller told us that if he was the Browns GM, he'd be kicking the tires on a Josh Rosen, and then a day later, they sign him. So kind of in a roundabout way, Killer Bees broke that news. But if you look at the if you look at the salary cap in the NFL, the Cleveland Browns, who, look, I think they can win a Super Bowl if Deshaun Watson's playing the second half of the year. I really do. Like, people thought that Cleveland could win a Super Bowl last year with Baker Mayfield.
That. I thought they had the most complete roster in the NFL a year ago.
There will be challenges for them, specifically in the first half of the season. There will be challenges for them until Deshaun Watson comes back. And then even when Deshaun Watson comes back, there's huge questions over the top of that of how good will Deshaun Watson be after being out for a year and a half. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender with Josh Rosen or Jacoby Brissett, but if it's eight games, yeah, they can realistically win a Super Bowl this year.
But again, like the best that we've seen do it, i.e. when the Saints had Jameis Winston when Drew Brees went down or what the Eagles did previous to that, when you have a really, really good backup quarterback, you tread water a lot better, and you keep the ship afloat until your star comes back. I don't think that either guy that the Browns have in that position gives them the opportunity to do that adequately enough. I don't think Josh Rosen, I would have been looking for a guy similar to that of Jacoby Brissett that's still young enough, but also experienced enough on one, if not multiple fronts of being able to be a starter in small windows of time and do something with it. Josh Rosen is one of the bigger busts we've seen at the quarterback position that, you know, when you're a first round pick by a franchise and after a year, they're already taking the number one overall pick in the draft and taking another quarterback. That tells you how bad you were.
It tells you how great Kyler Murray is.
Does it? So that's a different discussion for probably whatever day. But here's the thing. When you look at Josh Rosen, that's so unimpressive. There had to be someone else out there that you could have gone to and said, there's a Teddy Bridgewater type that I could put with a Jacoby Brissett type. And I could have said, hey, these are two veterans that have come in short windows of time and led teams to victories that I could utilize until I know how much time I'm trying to kill until Deshaun Watson comes back.
Rosen, to me, almost feels like, do you think Cleveland's been told what to expect? Like, what kind of suspension length they should be looking at?
I don't.
Do you think they have any idea whatsoever?
It depends on who makes the final decision. Because, you know, the NFL, one day you hear the NFL's not going to be the ones that make the final decision. Then you hear that the judge, she's going to say what she thinks is, but at the end of the day,
settlement.
The commissioner has to be on board with it, and he can alter that. I don't know, but I don't think so. I don't think that would be right. I don't think it would be right to tip off. It's like inside trading in some regard, right? To let the Browns know this is coming. Well, do you let Rusty and Deshaun know too? Do you let everyone know? Because I think that's like opening the envelope before the award's announced. I don't think that the Price Waterhouse, whoever's running the award ceremony, that should be allowed.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that they know either, but I think that they're bracing themselves in case it is a longer suspension, that it gives them some sort of competition there between Brissett and Rosen, and whether it's 6 games, 8 games, whatever. So it is interesting they went with Rosen. But the thing that caught my eye of, like, why the Browns don't think of themselves as Super Bowl contenders, or at least they're not acting like Super Bowl contenders. Albert Breer tweeted this out the other day. Camp's opening. Here are the teams with the most cap space left. The Browns, ahead of the Josh Rosen signing, I don't think Josh Rosen cost them a whole lot of money.
I don't either.
That had the most cap space in the NFL. The Browns had the most cap space in the NFL by double the second place team with cap space. The Browns have $48 million under the cap. The Cowboys have $22 million. So if you're the Browns, you want to contend for a Super Bowl. It's part of the reason you traded for Deshaun Watson, gave up 3 first-round draft picks plus sweeteners, and then gave him the largest guaranteed contract to an NFL quarterback. Why are you $48 million under the salary cap?
And to the point I just made too, Jeremy, whether it's a veteran and whatever that salary is, and I'm not sure exactly which guys are still out there, but if you were to spend $8, $10 million on another quarterback, I don't think anybody would have questioned it because of how important it is, because basically they still have about the same roster. They still have as talented a roster as just about any other team in this league. So the fact that you bring up that stat and they have that much money in the bank and they spent peanuts to get a Josh Rosen, they either really believe in the resurrection of Jacoby Brissett, or they seriously don't want to or don't think they can compete until they know what Deshaun's situation is and get him through the suspension. And that's shocking to me based on the fact that you still have two of the best workhorse running backs in the NFL. You've got a decent offensive line. You've got skill positions across the board. You've got a defense that can dominate. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. You look at what's out there in free agency, too. There's some receivers there that can help the Cleveland Browns.
Sure.
Like, I know that Odell Beckham Jr. is still hurt, and he has to, like, you know, want to play for you. But some money might motivate him.
Plus, he doesn't hate Cleveland. He just didn't want to have that guy throwing him the football anymore.
Right. It was more of a Baker thing.
Yeah,
I think
totally
there's been reports that Odell would be up for a return to Cleveland. There's also one other receiver that, to me, makes a whole lot of sense for Cleveland. And look, they're $48 million in the cap. I'm not telling them to go out and sign Odell Beckham Jr. to a 5-year deal. Like, why not go out and get 5-6 free agents at positions where you're sort of weak at, spend $7, $8 million for each one, and be $10 million under the cap, be $7 million under the cap? How about Will Fuller? Will Fuller, whenever he's been playing with Deshaun Watson, I know there's lots of injury risk with Will Fuller, but when Will Fuller's been healthy and he's been paired up with Deshaun Watson, has looked like a high-end wide receiver, too, in the NFL. So if Deshaun Watson's on that football team and he gets less than a year suspension, the first call I'm making, because Deshaun's going to be playing quarterback for me at some point this year, because I'm $48 million under the salary cap, I'm calling Will Fuller and saying, let me get you on a first-class fight to
sense,
Cleveland.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a perfect fit for so many reasons, whether it's Deshaun or not, but because at a certain time they're going to be paired up again and they have that familiarity and timing. I look at Cole Beasley and say, look for a guy like that, too, that could play the slot for you, that's not afraid to go in traffic. And I don't know what he's got left in the tank, but I know that he played in Buffalo a year ago, and he still did. He was better than serviceable for them. And I know that when you need a first down, you know, he is the long in the tooth version of so many teams have so many guys just like that, slot receivers. Hunter Renfrow is probably the premier guy at the position right now doing the same thing, where the Browns could use a guy that in dump off situations that give you another variable, another wrinkle that defenses have to plan for. There are veterans like that out there too that need to be looked at. If you have all that cap money, try to enhance every other, whether it's get a better back, a third string quarterback, or try to enhance every other position where you might have the slightest shortcomings so that you're completely loaded, whether he comes back and when he comes back or not, and you have your best chance to win.
Some people have asked us about the Texans cap situation, clearing out all the money. Nick Caserio has done a good job of tearing it all down, which I would say that's the easy job, tearing it all down, you know, doing the demo of an organization. The tough part is rebuilding it. But he's done a good job of tearing it down. He's done a good job with the demo. He's done a good job of putting the Texans in a position going forward to have some cap space, have some, you know, very luxurious draft picks as well. But most of those cap savings don't hit until next year. They're like $7.5 million under the cap right now. Next offseason, though, $40-something million
Perfect.
Under the salary cap.
Perfect. Get another good draft under your belt. realize where you still may have some holes that you weren't able to fill from the draft. Load up and start putting some veterans sprinkled in. And I don't mean load up by overspending. Don't do what Jacksonville did. But go out and get some younger-sided veterans that can come in and sweeten the pot for you and enhance areas you weren't able to focus on completely. Make this team better and continue that train down the track.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Alden Gonzalez, who wrote a piece on ESPN, he's a Major League Baseball reporter for ESPN, wrote a piece about the Astros' international starting pitchers that they got for cheap, and they got at an older age. Fromber, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, and Christian Javier. Alden Gonzalez will join us when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line. We're joining us now. Alden Gonzalez covers Major League Baseball for ESPN. Recently wrote a piece about the Houston Astros starting rotation, specifically the international signings that they have in that rotation. Fromber, Valdez, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy. Alden, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with us on this Friday afternoon. Whenever you wrote that piece, what were some of the most interesting things you learned about this young core for the Astros in this starting rotation?
Honestly, guys, it's just their each of their individual stories and each of their developments is phenomenal. I think I wrote that in the story that they're basically four miracles, because when you consider players like Urquidy and Valdez and Garcia, those are guys that are undervalued in the international market. Those are guys that are never really given a chance. And anytime you can develop players like that, I mean, when you consider that every year there are about 400 guys who sign for five-figure bonuses, which is what the four of those guys, except Urquidy, got, for them to all matriculate to the major leagues and not just get there, but stay there, prove that they are consistent, effective major league starting pitchers, all four of those cases are just, you know, you don't see that. You don't ever see that. And, you know, how they found them, how they got the most out of them, every single one of those stories is unique, and every single one of those stories, I think, was special.
I think it's unique, too, in the fact that when you talk about it, Alden, you think about it, every team could have one of those guys. The fact that they all were discovered, they're all together. And now the great thing is you see the camaraderie, the togetherness, and how great not only the stories are, but the people behind the stories in each of those situations, and realize how much fun they're having. And then you think about how they got Altuve the same way and how they discovered him. And it just adds to what a great story it is.
Absolutely. I mean, I honestly think, guys, that it's the story of the Astros. It's the story of the Astros in every bit as much as it is Alex Bregman and trading for Justin Verlander and just the core of star players that they built. And the reason why that story just sort of grabbed at me was because we see this all the time with teams that emerge as these sort of juggernaut teams like the Astros did, right? We saw it with the Cubs. The Cubs emerged in 2016, and the narrative around them was, this is the beginning of a dynasty in Chicago, and it never materialized. The reason why that never materialized was because they were never able to develop pitching. And what happens when you get a team that ascends, the natural progression of this is that those young players that you drafted high or that you spent a lot on internationally, they get more expensive. And then when those players get more expensive, and then when you catapult that by drafting later in the first round because you're finishing the prior season with better records, it's so hard to just sort of maintain that sustainability. You need guys who develop on the other end of the payroll who are cheaper but who are very good. And I honestly don't think that the Astros are where they are right now. I mean, some people might disagree with that, but if they're not getting effective production from guys who are cheaper, like Urquidy, like Javier, like Garcia, like Valdez, I don't think they have the sustainability that we're talking about here, where you're looking at this year, they have a good chance of getting to the ALCS for a sixth time. And, you know, you look next year and the year after that, you see just sort of the nucleus of a team that's going to continue to be in contention.
That's something that's talked about a lot here, Alden. I think that you're right in line saying that, that this four that you're talking about, all minor miracles to be where they are, I mean, they're very critical to the success of what is the one of the best pitching rotations in all of baseball. And, like, one of the topics of conversation in this city is, like, is the Astros window closing with Cole gone, Springer gone, Correa gone? But you see, like, kind of a new nucleus with Yordan, Tucker, but then namely the starting pitchers that you mentioned as well. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, because you mentioned this in the article, that the Astros went out and got these guys whenever they were older, and a lot of teams were ignoring them because of their age. And the Astros' mantra was, look, we don't care how old they are, we just care if they're good. Have you seen a change around Major League Baseball where they're going after some of the older international free agents because of the Houston Astros?
Not necessarily, and I think Oz Ocampo, who ran their international department at that time and has come back as a cross-checker, he touched on this, where, yes, a lot of teams are signing older players at cheaper rates, but not because they think that they could extract much value out of them. What's going on right now internationally is a lot of teams have invested a lot of resources, especially in the Dominican Republic. And so a lot of teams in the Dominican Republic now, they field two teams out of the Dominican Academy. I mean, 10 years ago, a lot of teams didn't have any teams in the Dominican Republic. Now they're fielding two teams. And so what you need to fill out those rosters. So, yes, a lot of teams go out and they sign pitching to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, but they do it mostly to just fill out their affiliates. They don't really do it because they think they're going to build starting pitchers out of these guys. And I think what separates the Astros is they treat the guy that they signed for $20,000, $10,000, like Javier, like Valdez, they treat him like their seven-figure bonus baby. They put just as much resources into those pitchers as they do with everybody else, whereas in other organizations, that's not really the priority. I think that's the separator. I think they care. Like when Oz Ocampo got there in 2012, he told me this recently, that their goal was to be number one or number two in the Dominican Republic, in Venezuela, and in Cuba, right? Like the three places where most of the Latin American talent comes from. And in order to do that, they needed to invest resources, not only invest resources there, but learn about the cultures there and have boots on the ground there, and just sort of be in touch with those communities. And I think that care is shown in some of that sort of camaraderie that you talked about with those four pitchers coming up to the system, coming up together. You know, one thing that I wish I could have done in the article, but is actually impossible, is just to sort of credit all the different people who are instrumental in the development of guys like this. I mean, it goes way beyond even the people that I mentioned in that story, because so many people just sort of have to have their hands on these guys in order to make that happen. So I guess it's just a longer way of answering your question. Yes, a lot of teams are signing these guys. I don't think teams are placing as much importance on them, though, as the Astros did previously.
And I think the Astros continue to get credit for that, Alden, because I think the other story that fits all of this narrative is the fact that when they went calling on the Dodgers for Yordan Alvarez, the Dodgers actually thought they were referring to another prospect that they were worried about losing. And then when they found out it was Yordan Alvarez, just basically said, oh, yeah, sure, go take him. Now you look and fast forward it and see not only how it's turned out, but how both sides came together on a deal that's going to be so friendly for the Astros going forward. And it sends that message about, hey, guess who cares about the players in the Dominican? Guess who cares about the international player? And guess who scouts them better than anybody else? The Houston Astros.
And that's a big separator. I mean, how often do you see the Dodgers look bad on a trade like that? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the one that everybody points to. And you guys probably know this already, but the Astros identified Yordan Alvarez. They liked him. They were huge fans of him from the onset, and it's why they wanted to trade for him, and it's why they were willing to give up a first-round pick like they did for Yordan Alvarez, because they liked him so much. And that's, it doesn't get talked about as much, and rightfully so, right? Because Alex Bregman developed into such a star. Kyle Tucker, we're seeing it now. Carlos Correa, George Springer, Jose Altuve. But, you know, I covered the Angels for a long time, and they are a living embodiment of how you need more than just even a couple of guys, a couple of superstars, to consistently win. And the one thing that they couldn't do is develop pitching. And what the Astros have done and the reason why they're here is because they developed those four guys.
Alden, I think it's one of the conversations that's going on right now around Major League Baseball, namely because Juan Soto. I mean, teams are talking, there's reports of, you know, certain packages from certain teams, what the cost would be for a Juan Soto. And then you look at the Angels, who have arguably the two best players in baseball with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, and it's like, what does it take to win in Major League Baseball? Is it top-heavy names at the top, or is it just one complete team? What do you think's the right recipe?
Development. You have to be able to develop if you want to win. You can't buy your way into a World Series, I don't think. Maybe you can buy your way into one, but you better have the development if you want to sustain it. I think the Nationals, Juan Soto's team, is a perfect example. They had sort of, when they won in 2019, I didn't think that they were the best team in that playoff field by a lot. But they were very top-heavy. They had that great rotation. They had Soto and Anthony Rendon. And so they were able to win some short series and win it all. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. But if you want sustainability, you better be able to develop guys in your system. I think the Dodgers do it just as well as anybody, to be honest. I mean, they still have the lowest ERA in baseball. And if you look at their pitching staff and the amount of injuries that they've had, it's incredible. But they're able to develop guys, and they're able to just sort of find ways to win games, regardless of who's out there on the mound for them. But there's no question that you need to be able to develop. You need to be able to have guys who are controllable, who are giving you value. Because once you go into the free agent market to try to fill holes, which ends up happening to a lot of teams when their farm system dries up, it's just a very dangerous proposition because you're signing guys now at high dollar amounts when they're either at the end of their prime or nearing the end of their prime. And then that's when sort of things start to speed up on you, and that's when teams have to start to rebuild. If you don't have that constant pipeline of development, you're not going to be able to achieve sustainability.
Alden, we appreciate you taking a few minutes, hanging out with us. Great job on the article. Continue the great work, and we'll catch up again soon, hopefully.
Great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. It's Alden Gonzalez, who covers Major League Baseball for ESPN. Fascinating insight. If you haven't taken a look at that, make sure you find it with the Astros' four starters.
And I think back to, like, when the Astros got Yuli, and then we're trying to get Lourdes Gurriel.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about that and you say, especially when you've lost picks because of all the things that you've been through, you have to create other opportunities for resources in a pipeline. You got to believe that most of the kids growing up in the Dominican that are playing ball right now or down in Mexico are thinking to themselves, hey, man, if I have my choice and my druthers, I want to be in that system with those guys because they not only know how to find the talent, but they know how to develop and give us the best chance to play.
I think it's why the Astros have been one of the best organizations in baseball is the pipeline, is that player development. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of a couple of homegrown players, Lance McCullers Jr. is back. How about a Lance McCullers Jr., Hunter Brown, guess the date? But I also have the map for Lance McCullers to make it back to this team. Along the way, especially if Lance gets hurt again, I'm probably going to need a drink. And whenever I have a drink, it's Gentle Ben's. It's the vodka, it's the gin, it's the bourbon. All of them are part of the rotation for me. Gentle Ben Spirits does it all, and they do it better than anyone. And they do it better than anyone because they use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Prosecco craft technology. It's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben. It'll change your life. Compare it to your brand, and you're going to taste the huge difference that I did. Ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is so smooth. It is so clean. It eliminates that burn, too. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. Also online at gentleben.com. Also, if you're in the Beaumont area, Deb's Liquor is now selling Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin. If you're at Minute Maid Park and you're in the Diamond Club, the Gentle Ben is there as well. That news breaking this week. That is awesome news for everybody in that Diamond Club specifically. Also, if you want to head to that tasting room in Alvin, you got to do that. And while you're there, try the bourbon. Exclusive to the tasting room, 94-proof bourbon. Winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year. Exclusive to the tasting room in Alvin. Also, one note on Gentle Ben. They're looking for brand ambassadors. So if you or anyone you know is interested, check out the website, gentleben.com. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Well, hello! To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lance McCullers is back. Why'd you look at me like that? He's back. He's pitching tonight in San Antonio against the Missions.
Don't tease people like
that. For
the
Hooks.
He's not back in the major leagues, and I told you I'm not going to get excited until he gets back and puts on an Astros jersey. He's going to throw two innings tonight.
I didn't say you had to be excited, and I didn't say he was back in the majors.
I'm just telling you how I feel. I'm going to express my opinion anyway.
He's back on the bump tonight in
San
Antonio. Two innings, yeah.
Okay.
Two innings.
How many curveballs?
I think he'll throw his normal repertoire.
Do you?
Why wouldn't he?
Because they're still basically handling it with the smallest kid gloves on the planet.
He's been throwing his normal repertoire in the little bullpens, the up-downs and stuff.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure, unless he's lying through his teeth.
I asked Jacob Rizzi. I saw the. I'm waiting for the phone footage to be sent my way.
But anyways, he's pitching today for the Corpus Christi Hooks. Sugar Land Space Cowboys are out of town through the rest of the month. Of course, we know that the rehab assignment starts tonight. Mm-hmm. One other thing that we know is that a major league pitcher gets 30 days on their rehab assignment. So we know that Lance McCullers, at some point between now and the 30-day mark, which would be August 20th, that a decision has to be made whether he is back on the 26-man roster or they put him back on the IL because something else happened. But I feel like I have the perfect plan to bring Lance McCullers back to the Houston Astros and to ease his way in. Because a lot of the topics, like he's only pitching two innings today. So the point that you made is valid. Like he needs to be worked up. He's still got a long road ahead of him. I would say close to a month of work ahead of him.
Did we both say mid-August?
We both said August 15th. Yeah.
I like your deep dive then because it looks like it's right on target.
So I've mapped out the schedule for Lance McCullers to the date, right? To the absolute date. Because how many rehab assignments do you think he's going to get? He gets 30 days.
About four.
I think it's going to be four, potentially
four to
five.
Yep, I'll go with that.
I went with four on the schedule that I have for Lance McCullers. So I have, of course, he's pitching tonight with the Corpus Christi Hooks at San Antonio. So Friday the 22nd. I think, again, they're going to be careful with Lance McCullers. So they're not going to pitch him every fifth day, but they can pitch him every sixth
day. That's what I was thinking as well.
So you go Thursday the 28th with Sugar Land. He can also go Corpus Christi, but they're both on the road, so you're not getting a gate there. Sugar Land is at Oklahoma City. Corpus Christi is at Amarillo. So pick whichever place you want Lance McCullers to go. It doesn't really matter. He's pitching on the 28th. Then you rest him again, back on the mound on August 3rd, this time with the Sugar Land Space Cowboys against the Round Rock Express over at Constellation Field
only
on a Wednesday night when it's Dollar Dog Night at Constellation Field. So get your tickets now August 3rd. This is just me guessing. Don't send me the bill whenever he's not pitching on August 3rd. Again, you say, you know, he's pitching on every 6 days. He's getting 5 days of rest here because I'm trying to be careful with Lance McCullers. August 9th, this is his final rehab assignment, Sugar Land Space Cowboys at El Paso on August 9th. So now you give him five more days. He pitches on the sixth day, this time for the Houston Astros. It's August 15th, the day that we predicted, and it's also at the scene of the crime. It's in Chicago against the White Sox.
Wow.
On August 15th. That's my guess. I think Lance McCullers.
I like it. That's one of the best deep dives that you've ever done.
Come on, man. You're selling me short.
No, I'm not. I just think that was like, it was so pertinent. It was precise. We were right. If it happens. Yeah, it would be great. And then I would be actually excited for the first time to see what he's got and how he could possibly help this team. I just hope everything goes as planned. I'm looking at that, and I was kind of along the same page as you, thinking every 6 day. But I also thought that final 5-6 days was going to be basically used to evaluate him one more time without having to worry about being in a game or not. What's the arm feel like? What's the load like? You know, how stretched out is he so that they can calculate how he would be used when he gets to the major league level? Because there's still going to be a discussion about if he's a starter or not. Because in the playoffs and down the stretch, you're going to want to show the signs that a starter is going to be able to give you six innings. Mm-hmm. That's going to be able to, so that your bullpen isn't super taxed every time he takes the mound. So I think that still remains up in the air, and that's where I think the evaluation process will truly come to fruition, is in that final 5-6 days.
I'm not really worried about the results for Lance McCullers tonight. Like, the only result that I'm cared about is that he wakes up tomorrow and can pitch again. Like, yep. I don't care if he...
No setbacks physically would be the big win.
Yeah, I want to see the arsenal. I want to see what the velo's up to. I do want to see the pitch breakdown. How many sliders is he throwing? How many curveballs? Whatever. Like, that matters. How many hits he gives up in two innings today is the furthest thing from my mind. Now, if we get closer to August 15th, when we start looking at the results a little closer.
I'm looking at the sliders and the curveballs for sure. You know, because he even said himself, until he gets ramped all the way up, his velocity is probably not going to get to where it was.
Yep.
But, you know, not only how many he throws breaking pitch-wise, but where he's putting them. Because we know that as good as his curveball can be, and it normally is, if it's not right, if he doesn't feel right, it's going to be in locations that you're not used to seeing Lance McCullers' curveballs and sliders. They're not down in the zone. They're not diving across the plate instead of just kind of hanging across the plate. I want to watch that. And again, it's his first rehab start. I'm not expecting perfection, but I want to see that he's throwing them, and I want to see that at least he has it in the vicinity of where they're going to need to be when he plays Major League Baseball again.
Yeah, so that's my plan for Lance McCullers. If you want to pick the date on when Lance McCullers pitches again for the Houston Astros, feel free, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees have August 15th. You can pick yours. How about Hunter Brown? When do you think Hunter Brown makes his Houston Astro debut?
I'd say more towards the end of August.
Okay.
And I think they're going to wait it out to see what happens with Lance. I think barring injury, they're going to want him to continue to keep doing what he has been doing in Sugarland. And then they're going as they start getting into full-blown focus on the postseason, that's when they're going to start figuring out if there's a role for Hunter Brown. And if there is, what he needs to get reps doing between that point and the end of the regular season.
I can't really see him being called up ahead of September 1st unless there's an injury. When rosters expand to 28th. I'm actually going to predict something different. I'm going to predict opening day 2023. I don't think we see Hunter Brown in this organization this year, with the Houston Astros this year, I should say. Like, I do think he's a better arm.
You don't think they're even going to look at him in September?
I don't.
Really?
And the reason why is because, like, I don't think he's an upgrade. Look, he's not an upgrade over anybody in the starting rotation right now. You can make the case that he's an upgrade over, you know, Abreu, Seth Martinez, the guys in the back end of your bullpen. But you probably don't even want to use those guys in playoff games. You know what I mean? Like, you have your high-leverage relievers, Ryan Pressly, Hector Neris, Rafael Montero, Ryan Stanek. They still have faith in Phil Maton. And if they trade for another arm or two, now, like, where is he getting a roster spot? And if he's pitching in the back end of a bullpen for 2-3 innings in the month of September, he's not on the playoff roster, why are you starting the clock on Hunter Brown?
No, I agree with all that. I thought you thought that he was going to be a relief pitcher this year for them.
I think he has a chance to be. I think he's an upgrade over Abreu. I think he's an upgrade over Martinez. But the more I think about it, the fact that Lance McCullers is out on a rehab assignment, he's going to take up a roster spot. The fact that they could trade for an arm or two, they're also going to take up a roster spot. I don't think he's an upgrade over the back end of your bullpen. I think he's an upgrade over, like, the lower leverage guys in your bullpen. But that's so low leverage. Why are you wasting, like, the start of the clock whenever you don't need to?
I think the bigger thing, and this is a potential win-lose situation, I think you need to see who he is. Because we heard what Keith Law said. I know what Patrick Creighton has told us from calling his games. And the difference is it lies somewhere in the middle? Who's right, who's wrong? But I need to know what he's going to be in the major leagues. And the only problem with the negative is that other teams will figure that out too. And if you think he's a starter and suddenly he's not, or he shows he can't be, or he's not there yet, that's a setback, whether you plan on him being a part of your team or another team in a trade.
Yeah, so I don't think that Hunter Brown's going to be with the Houston Astros this season. Erica texting in, 713-780-ESPN. Third game in the 2023-24 season for Hunter. Now, that's a bit egregious. 2024? Come on, he's going to pitch on the Astros next year. Now, it is interesting.
Wait,
when
third game? Hopefully there's JV, and then there's Fromber.
He said 24, though.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a 23-24. That's not really a thing. Anyways, whenever Lance McCullers does come back, because, again, he has to be back on this team on August 20th if there's not any setbacks or any sort of injuries, what are the Astros going to do with their rotation? How are they going to plan it all out, map it all out for the rest of the season once Lance McCullers is back?
I know one
the
guy that's going to be asking that to Mark Berman over and over again leading up to it.
Who's that?
Jake Odorizzi.
I don't think that Jake Odorizzi is going to be on this team after August 2nd.
I don't either.
I think he's going to be traded. I think the Astros are going to sell on Jake Odorizzi and be aggressive other places.
I completely agree. I think that a part of it is the fact that he has shown who he really is and how much it's about him instead of the team and just the way he's handled everything when they've given him every opportunity to prove himself again, to hang on to the major league spot. But just that little that they don't need, that little nagging, oh, Jake's going to Jake again. Oh, Jake wants to pitch again, and he's going to say when he wants to pitch. That's the kind of stuff that at a certain point you're just like, you're not worth enough to me to keep doing this. And if you're going to become a distraction, it's the last thing that I need when I'm trying to formulate what we're going to do for the biggest and most important time of the year. I agree with you. I think he's going to be elsewhere come the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think they're going to be sellers on Jake Odorizzi and buyers elsewhere.
I don't think they're going to be really focused on what they get for him either.
I think they're going to want a second-tier prospect.
They're going to want something, like a prospect.
I think he gets you a second-tier prospect. Okay. I mean, he's a sub-3.5 ERA pitcher, right?
Like for the short term, yeah, for what he's shown recently.
How many sub-3.5 ERA starting pitchers are on the market? Very, very few.
How many teams want that guy for more than this year?
Well, I mean, even if it's only for next year, it's $12 million. It's $6.5 million base up to 12. Yeah. I mean, I would pay $6.5, $12 million if I needed a starting pitcher next year for a sub-3.5 ERA guy. I don't think the contract's bad. I feel like the surplus of the Astros rotation makes him like kind of a, like, what's the right word here? Like, he's an abundance of what you need. Like, you don't need
a surplus of starting pitching.
You don't need to spend up to $12 million if he hits all his escalators on your number 7 starting pitcher.
Right.
But in terms of the landscape of Major League Baseball, he's a number 3, number 4 starter on a lot of Major League Baseball teams.
I might go 4 or 5.
Got a sub 3.5 ERA.
Okay, you can say that in the short term, but we also saw what he was early in the season where no one wanted
to touch
him.
Look at his career, though. I mean, he's an all-star. His career numbers
are very
good.
He's on the downside of his career. Look, I hope that teams look at him that way and overpay. I just think sometimes, again, addition by subtraction, I think the organization is better off with Jake pitching somewhere else. And if you get something for him, that'd be great.
I just think the price tag is a lot higher now than it was whenever was in his first 3 starts of the year where he was getting lit up and everybody wanted to make his life miserable and DFA him. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, 2 o'clock on Fridays, we play Who Said It? The Who Said It Championship of the World. Killer Bees are on a tear right now. We're on a run. We are the champions. And since we are fighting champions, it's an open challenge. And it's an open challenge to you, the listener. If you want to contend against the Killer Bees for the Who Said It Championship, now's your chance. Call in 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It is your chance to go toe-to-toe with the Killer Bees and Who Said It next on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.